Hello, this is Anthony Gismani with a special welcome to our podcast this week. It's the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, and we'd like to welcome you from wherever you're listening worldwide. Our show today is brought to you in part by our hotel partner, the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, home base for the BC Food and Wine Radio team while we're at the festival. If you're considering visiting Vancouver, there's no better place to be than the Weston Bay Shore. Steps from the West End, Stanley Park, and Vancouver's famous seawall with stunning North Shore Mountain and Cole Harbour views. Now, enjoy the show.
And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Live from our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to the 45th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival. We're coming to you from the floor of the Vancouver Trade and Convention Center, surrounded by 149 wineries from around the world. It's always a great three-day affair. The room, as usual, is packed with consumers, all of them seemingly asking bright questions and drinking gobs of wine and enjoying themselves, talking to principals, which is the best part of this whole festival. You always get to talk to somebody from the winery, and that makes the big difference in your collection of knowledge. Now, tonight we're going to talk to, on the show, Christian Ridolfi. He's a winemaker at Santi from Gruppo Italiano Vino in the Veneto. And we're going to talk about Lugana, which is one of the chicest white wines in Italy. And if you're in the Lake Garda area and you're not drinking Lugana, you are out to lunch. So we're going to learn a bit about that. Rod Hallam's going to join us. He's the export manager for Villa Maria Wines from New Zealand. We're going to talk about Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir, modern Pinot Noir in New Zealand. Arbor Shabani joins us from the Ridolfi Montalcino Winery in Tuscany. So we're going to talk about Brunello di Montalcino inside out. And up next, Marco Martini from Mondo del Vino. We're going to talk about wines that stretch all the way from Sicily to Emilia-Romagna. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and you are set to go.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Weston Bay Shore Vancouver.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, Marketing Manager at Visit Penticton. Did you know that Penticton was named the Craft Beer Capital of Canada? Joining me in studio is Kim Lawton, Marketing Director for Cannery Brewing and the Penticton Beer Blocks, Penticton's craft beer collective. Kim, what brings craft beer lovers to Penticton?
We have an amazing craft beer scene here in Penticton with unique family-run craft breweries, including some of BC's oldest, plus some of the newest craft breweries as well. All of our breweries are family-friendly, and each one offers something special, like great food, live music, and lots of other fun activities all year long.
And when is the best time to visit our craft breweries?
Any time of year. After a day of hiking, biking, skiing, or hanging at the beach, our craft breweries are the perfect place to unwind and soak up the sun on our beautiful patios.
Amazing. Thanks, Kim. For information on all our breweries, events, and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
Now, back to our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network, our guest is Marco Martini. He's the Director and General Manager for MGM Mondo del Vino. from Piedmont, one of our favorite places, and Sicily and many other places. Welcome to the show.
Anthony, well, thank you very much, and hello to everybody.
It's great to have you back. You reminded me we met probably about 7 years ago now, I think. Up in Italy, which is always such a great place to be. Do you know how lucky you are to live in a place like that when you're in the food and wine scene or culture?
I think we can realize when we are out exporting our wines, we realize that we are able to offer all the producers a wide range of products coming from different areas and different from area to area.
Yeah. And when I often talk about the culture of wine here in Vancouver and in British Columbia, but you grow up in a place like, did you feel it from a very young age? Like it's not that it's not special. It's almost like it's just part of life in Italy.
It is, frankly speaking, it is. Especially myself with a father who is enologue, a winemaker. And I was born on the 5th of October. That is the period for harvesting Sangiovese.
Yeah.
And just to let you know, my father forgot to register me in the book. You know? So he went 1 week later because we were really in the middle of harvesting Sangiovese.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Did your mother know that? Or
He told her later.
Later. Fantastic. Okay, MGM, Mondo Del Vino. Can you explain this to us?
Yeah, is a company founded by my father, so it's a family company.
Yeah.
MGM are the initials of the three founders, Martini, Gab, Mac, so three friends who decided to establish a company in Italy, able to create products, wines from different areas of Italy. And we have wineries in different areas of Italy, of course, so from Sicily till Piedmont, and also in Romagna, where we met last time.
Which means a lot of different kinds of wine as well.
Ah, for sure. And in every region, also in every single region, you can find and you can create different styles of products, of course. But to work in Sicily is completely different from Piedmont, is completely different from Veneto or Emilia-Romagna region.
Yeah, yeah. You're a green company too. You're big on that.
We are a green company. Of course, the ESG criteria are absolutely necessary for nowadays to preserve and to save, to try to save the world. And everything that we do in our production is connected also to a objective to reduce the impact to the nature.
Does that become easier? Like, does that become part of the culture of the company too? That you know, everything that you do for a purpose.
Yes, we do for a purpose that is of course connected to the nature and also to social and welfare behavior of the people working in the company and also for the territory where we are based. A company is important for what is doing around the territory where it's based, and everything we do is also connected to a goodwill for well-being for the
to
for
be
the
a
territory.
Human being in this world.
If we want to survive, we have to
work together.
Exactly.
We have to save it together.
Exactly.
Our guest is Marco Martini. He's the director and general manager of Mondo Del Vino, which have several different wineries across the country of Italy. You brought a couple of wines today, so why don't we start with Pinot Grigio. Pinot Grigio is one of those wines that people say is great, is no good, there's too much, I love it. It has a wide history. What can you tell us about Pinot Grigio and how do you handle it?
But the Pinot, first of all, I brought here two wines, one from the deep south, that is the Pinot Grigio, Sicily, Barone Montalto, and another one that we will taste after, that is, we will talk about after, that is a Spumante from Piemonte, so from south to the north. Mm-hmm. About Pinot Grigio, is the king of the white wine in Italy, and mainly is produced in Veneto. Here we have presented and we distribute in BC a Pinot Grigio from Sicily, from southwest part of Sicily, and we bring here the sun of Sicily in the glass. Mm. I have to say that our Pinot Grigio is completely different style compared to the northern Italian Pinot Grigios. And it's something that has more body, more structure, more fruit, and a zesty note that is very pleasant.
Yeah. People sometimes associate Sicily with hot wines, but the acidity and the shape of the land and where it's grown, it's a cooler climate in some ways.
Absolutely, because we find that the vineyards usually at a very decent altitude, because we are talking about 300, 400 meters, talking about southwestern Sicily. If then we go to the east part, where is the Etna volcan and the Etna area, we are at altitudes that are much higher than 300. But this area with this air that gives a microclimate that is different from what we usually think about Sicily, gives good acidity and good structure.
Yeah, the texture is quite bright and fresh, but there's a volume of sunshine there. You can feel the flavor in it.
It's the sunshine in the glass. Yeah. It's the sunshine of Sicily that gives the maturation and the good aging of the grapes.
This wine is widely available, folks, and you're not going to believe that it's $12.99 in Canada. It's absolutely ridiculous price. And for people who are always complaining to me about the price of wine is way too high, this wine is an absolute steal. So Baroni, Montalto, and we're tasting the vintage.
Is the 22?
22, okay.
Is the 2022.
Also screw cap, extra points for that. So super fresh, all clean.
Keeping it in the fridge once open is perfect for a patio aperitif, a glass of wine around the swimming pool.
Okay, Mark, I can't take my eyes off the color of this cuvage. I don't know this wine at all. It looks unbelievably interesting to me. It's a Rosé Brut Nebbiolo d'Alba.
Nebbiolo d'Alba, metodo classico. So we are talking about the Champenois method. So the same method to produce champagne.
Yeah.
This is coming from our winery called Cuvage, that is based in Piedmont and is in the area of Alto Monferrato.
Okay.
And is very connected also to Alta Langa, that is an appellation that is taking off quite heavily for Metodo Classico. Here we are out anyhow from Alta Langa region. We are in the area of Alba, so is a DOC and 100% Nebbiolo. We are talking about the grape varietal and the area where the Barolo comes from.
Yeah.
So we just pick the grapes a little bit earlier than the normal harvest timing.
Yeah.
And of course we select the bunches of grapes. We do vinification, short time of contact of the skin together with the must to extract this pale, nice rosé color, very elegant. And then we, after a while, and aging in tank, we bottle the wine for keeping in the cellar for at least 24 months on yeast and lees. After that, there is the dégorgement, and then the bottle that is available for to be drunk.
It's quite a nice package too.
Yeah, Cuvage, I have to tell the story about the name, the origin of the name. My father and myself, we were around the table like we are now.
Yeah.
And we bought this winery to make spumante, to make sparkling wines. And we say, wow, what could be the name of the winery? What could be? So we have to make sparkling. So we have to think about cuvée, we have to think about bubbles, we have to think about perlage, cuvée, perlage, cuvage.
Cuvage. Oh,
and
wow.
So it's come out the name of the winery and the name of the Metodo Classico.
That's fantastic.
This is a wine that also has been awarded by a guru of champagne, Tom Stevenson, London.
Yeah.
Awarded many years in the past 4 or 5 years.
That's fantastic. Yeah. He's very well respected. I can see the wine is delicious. And even just looking at the bead here, it's so tiny. Tiny bubbles, that's where the money is at. So Nebbiolo d'Alba, this is a Rosé Brut. Do you make other, many different sparklings do you make under that?
Cuvage, under Cuvage we have another couple of wines. One is a Blanc de Blanc.
Okay.
Chardonnay 100%.
Yeah.
And the other one is an Alta Langa.
Yeah.
Based on Pinot Noir and Chardonnay grapes.
Mm-hmm.
Where we have an aging in bottle for at least 36 months, because it's due by the law of Alta Langa.
Yeah.
But we keep it still 45 months.
Yeah. So much going on. I know we met at Nespoli. The wine is also still in the marketplace here, and you've been pouring some of that. How's that brand doing?
The brand is doing very well because, I mean, Romagna is an area that is a little bit undiscovered. I suggest also to come and visit us because for tourism is amazing. But is the great house for Sangiovese.
Yeah, so the home. I think it's the home of Sangiovese.
It's the home
of Sangiovese. Tuscans think it's theirs, but...
In reality, the first planting of Sangiovese has been done in Romagna.
Yeah, exactly.
In, I think, 13th or 12th century.
Yeah.
And that is the home of Sangiovese. We are very happy. It's doing very well.
Yeah. Well, Marco, it's great to catch up with you. Always says so much fun to taste these wines, folks. The Barone Montalto, the 2022 Pinot Grigio, $12.99. Honestly, just pick some of that up and enjoy it with some West Coast seafood. And then for something special, check out the Cuvage Rosé Brut. You can't be any cooler than when you're pouring a Nebbiolo d'Alba sparkling wine for your friends.
This is a 2019, just for to complete the information.
$41.99. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Great to see you. That was Marco Martini. He's the director and general manager of MGM Mondo del Vino from Piedmont all the way down to Sicily, several places in between. Still to come, Arbor Shabani. He's the winemaker at Ridolfi Montalcino. That's located in Tuscany. We'll be back. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. The place for winter adventure and Okanagan wine. Enjoy champagne powder and après-ski at Apex Mountain or Baldy Resort, or step into cross-country skiing at Nickel Plate Nordic Center. After a day in the snow, slow down and experience one of over 80 nearby wineries with an intimate winter wine tasting. Before you go to Penticton, make sure to check the website for information on tasting room hours, winter highway, and ski hill conditions. And for more trip inspiration, go to visitpenticton.com.
Attention wine connoisseurs, Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Arbor Shabani. He's from the Ridolfi Winery in Montalcino, Tuscany. Where else would you want to be from? Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank
Great
you
to
for
have
having
you.
Me.
Let's start with Ridolfi, quite a small operation, and you're doing a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, Ridolfi is a small winery. We are on northeast part of Montalcino.
Yeah.
It's family-owned.
Yeah.
We have 21 hectares, only with one grape, Sangiovese.
Yeah.
The vision is to produce one of the most elegant wines in Montalcino, in a very classic and traditional style.
So you're very focused on Brunello di Montalcino.
Yes, exactly.
So the production there is what, like a regular Brunello?
We do a Rosso di Montalcino, a traditional Brunello, and when we think we have something special, we produce a Brunello Riserva, and there's also a small production of Brunello Selezione. So this is the
Well, is that a single vineyard or just a certain selection of...
Both the Reserva and the Selezione are both single vineyards.
Yeah,
so
nice.
This is a bit what is going on also in Montalcino. The single vineyards are going more and more.
Well, great to have you. Let's just back up a bit. So Montalcino, for people who don't know where it is, mm-hmm. could you describe maybe between Florence or Siena or whatever?
Exactly. Well, Montalcino is in Tuscany. It's the south part of Tuscany.
Right.
It's the southeast part of Montalcino. It's very close to the seaside. So mm-hmm. we are talking about 30 kilometers from the Tyrrhenian Sea. So, yeah, it's south of Florence, south of Siena.
Yeah.
It's a small area of production. We are talking about 2,000 hectares.
Yep.
With an average of production about 9.6 million of Brunello, which in terms of numbers could be a lot, but there is not a lot. It's a very, very small production.
But yet, even Brunello, it's only really about 50 years old that when people got serious about Brunello. So it's an old wine, but it has a lot of history, but the best history is only in the last sort of 50 years, maybe the last 30 years.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Well, we have to thank the northern part of the Americas. Especially the United States, because then we, historically, we've been famous in the 80s and 90s in the United States, thanks to the great journalists that we have from the North America. So, and then that is story.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was thinking, the Americans, probably Brunello's something they can remember, so they latched onto it. But actually, it's great wine. You mentioned only one grape, which really is the focus. We know Sangiovese from many places, mm-hmm. but it's a special Sangiovese mm-hmm. in Montalcino.
So, nowadays in Italy, we have more than 200 biotypes of Sangiovese.
Yeah.
So, we have to consider like Sangiovese with brothers and sisters. So, the family of Sangiovese is pretty big.
Lots of clones.
Lots of clones. And one thing that I want to say is that the Sangiovese is the most produced grape in whole Italy in terms of production, because you can have it in Emilia-Romagna, you can have in Tuscany, in Puglia, whatever. We call it that the toppest part of the diamond in terms of quality remains in Montalcino, because the Montalcino in terms of appellation Rosso di Montalcino and also Brunello di Montalcino is the only one that has 100% in terms of production the Brunello, the Sangiovese, sorry. So this is a bit what we do and what is the focus on Montalcino is the era where we have the best Sangiovese, the pure Sangiovese in Italy.
Yeah. Now, in terms of Ridolfi, how many Brunellos have a style. Well, how would you describe the style at Ridolfi?
Our style, it's very classic and traditional, because in the winery we have one of the most talented guys we have in Montalcino. His name is Gianni Macari. It's our director and winemaker. And for 18 years, he has been worked in one of the most important wineries together with Giulio Gambelli.
Yeah.
Giulio Gambelli is the father of the best Sangioveses that we ever had in Tuscany. He's the father of Soldera, the father of Poggio di Sotto, Pergola Torte. So today, what we do, what Gianni do, and what our team does, it's making those old wine style of Montalcino. So very bright and light, very elegant, very perfumed.
Yeah, lovely. I like that style. Okay, so we're going to taste the 2017 in a moment, but a lot of people here have seen the Rosso. Let's talk about Rosso for a minute. How is it handled at Ridolfi? What is Rosso di Montalcino?
Rosso di Montalcino, it's our DOC. It's 100% Sangiovese.
Mm-hmm.
Each winery then has its own vision and style.
Okay? Right.
Our vision is that the Rosso di Montalcino is our business card. We want to impress our clients with the freshness, with ready to drink.
The drinkability, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it's not the second wine.
Yeah. That's a key description. It's not a second wine.
It, for us, is the first wine. Because also when we do the tasting, the first wine that you approach to a winery is the Rosso di Montalcino.
Yeah.
And then you go to the Brunello di Montalcino.
Sure.
So what we do at Ridolfi is all the vineyards are harvested separate, are fermented separate, are... in also the aging is separate. After a year, of this wine that is aged in the big oak barrels, we taste all the barrels. The barrels that are more open, more fresher, more fruit forward, goes in the Rosso di Montalcino.
Yeah. Okay.
The barrels that are a bit more close, more shy, we call it internally, they will be our Brunello di Montalcino.
Our guest is Arber Shibani from the Ridolfi Winery in Montalcino. So we're going to taste now the 2017, which is in the marketplace. So 2017, there's been quite a run of vintages. How do you place 17 in the rows of like 18, 19, 20, that sort of thing?
17 was a very warm vintage.
Yeah.
Warm and dry. We didn't have rains in Montalcino from April to late August.
Yeah. Which so, I guess we're going to say that's unusual, but maybe not so unusual anymore, but... But it is getting warmer in,
exactly,
in Italy, in northern
Italy.
Yeah.
Exactly, exactly. So now we are going much more on the warm vintages than in cool vintages. Mm-hmm. So we worked very hard to keep the freshness.
Yeah.
And was a very challenging vintage because if you anticipate a bit the harvest to have a bit more acidity, then you probably will not have the perfect ripening of the grapes.
Right.
And if you wait a bit too much, you will have an over-ripening.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this is the... we have been awarded for the freshness of this wine.
You can taste it right off the bat when you first start into the wine. It has a very fresh character, more of almost a red fruit character up front, which is kind of nice to have. Keeps it lively.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And since we are on the northeast part, when I describe this wine, I said always this is... We have the powerful of that vintage together with the elegance and finesse of the cool part of Montalcino.
Yeah.
The entrance on the palate is very thin in the beginning, and as you can see in the palate, it all opens up and has a very high end drinkability.
So as it heats up, what are some of the things you're doing? Like you're picking earlier, what about in the vineyard itself? Are you shading the fruit, or how are you dealing with that?
So we are dealing in two, three ways. We have mostly clay.
Yeah.
Okay. And when it's very dry, the clay opens up in two parts, and the humidity from the underneath goes up.
Oh.
So what we do, we work very hard in the vineyard. We pass through the rows with the tractor. First of all, we make the soil as a powder. Mm-hmm. And then the next time we go over again to seal. So to keep the humidity,
inside.
Yeah. And what we are doing, we are spraying also on the leaves when it's very, very warm. We are spraying an antitranspirant.
Yeah.
An organic antitranspirant, because you know that the biggest part of the evaporation
is through the leaves.
So we are spraying this water with the antitranspirant to keep the humidity on the leaves.
Yeah.
This helps us
and
very
that's
much.
Working.
Yeah, working.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hours of work. It's a lot of sacrifices, but we are doing this to have this wine.
Is there new Brunello and old Brunello, or is that all done? Or like, you know, there's like the new Barolo or the old Barolo. What about in Brunello?
This is a very tough question. So it's very personal. So let's say that locally it's considered more classic and traditional, the big barrel, and it's considered a bit more modern style, the small barrel in terms of Tonneau or Barrique, but there are crazy good producers that they do very, very fantastic wines in small wine. So I don't think that this is any more a two-day thing. So we very much love the quality of a wine and what is the vision of a winery. I will go much more on this and saying that this is modern style or this is more classic style. Yes, we can talk a bit what about the history, but very much in terms of clients worldwide, it's about what is the vision, the quality of the wines, and what is your story.
Mm-hmm. So, in Canada now, Ridolfi, what is the plan for North America? Or I mean, you've been in the U.S., obviously.
Yep.
What about Canada?
Canada, it's a bit more a new market, for us. We are with Ethica Wines.
Yeah.
And here in Canada, we are represented from Select Wines.
Yeah.
And this is what we are doing. So introducing to the market the wines, the heritage and the quality, and the market is responding very well because they are loving the elegance and finesse of our wines.
Yeah. And Ethica, they're known for representing people who care about the planet, green wines, all of that. That's a big part of the Ridolfi culture.
That is a big part of us. So it's very important also the impact that we have, not only in terms of nature, but also in terms of social part and in terms also of consuming of the soil, the consuming of the consumption of the water, and this is very important for us because even we have a small winery, but still we think that we have an impact on our social part, in economic part, and so in nature part. So these three areas are very, very important for us.
Well, it has to be one person at a time. You know? you can't change millions overnight. It's got to be one at a time. Great to catch up with you. We're tasting the 2017 Rodolfo Brunello di Montalcino, which I would say is sort of a 5 to 7 year wine in terms of waiting, and then it will easily ride through a decade or more in bottle. Very, very well-made wine.
Grazie mille.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for having me here and for having us here.
Great pleasure. That was Zarber Shabani, the winemaker Rodolfo Montalcino, Tuscany. Still to come, Christian Rodolfi, the winemaker at Santi of Gruppo Italiano. He represents Bola and Santi next on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Visit Penticton this winter for mountain adventures and South Okanagan wine. Experience the quieter time of year at one of the nearby wineries that stay open year-round and enjoy an intimate winter wine tasting. Stop into the Penticton Visitor Center for discounted lift tickets to Apex Mountain Resort for a day in the snow. Penticton is the perfect destination for your winter getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and webcams for current conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Now, back to our spotlight stage at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. Christian Rodolfi is my guest. He's the winemaker at Santi for Gruppo Italiano. Vino. Is it Vino?
Yes, Vino wine.
Yeah, Vino wine. And also working with Bola. So we're going to talk about a couple wineries today. Maybe we'll start with that. Let's talk about Santi and Bola. Why are you together here pouring the wines?
Okay. First of all, thank you.
Oh, great to have you.
Thanks, Vancouver, to host us.
Yeah.
With a wonderful wine experience. Yes, well, Santi and Bola, two wineries from Valpolicella area.
Yeah.
Two of maybe the oldest winery from Verona. So Santi was born in 1843 and Bola 1883.
Okay.
So in the middle of the 19th century arrived the specialized viticulture in Veneto, and the two families in a different side of Valpolicella, because Bola is in the west side and Santi in east, decided to starting to produce wine, but especially to sell wines out of Verona. And the first wine was Valpolicella, but immediately later arrives some white as Soave, and then the Lugana.
Well, we're going to start with that today, because both of the wines, like Soave, has a long sort of a long commercial history. From our point of view, a wine that wasn't so good like in the 60s or 70s, at least what we were getting here, but now Soave has become very fashionable again. And the quality has really gone up. I don't know. How did you do that? Or
No, so Soave is a historic appellation. Soave is the name of the village. So, yeah. You know, in Italy we drink especially appellation, not varieties.
Right,
no?
Right.
So Soave is a beautiful area. It's a hilly area where we have a volcanic soil. It's a type of soil very rich in iron, especially, but gives the opportunity the Garganica grapes, the local grapes, to produce a lot of fruity aroma, maintaining especially the acidity and the good salty salinity taste.
Yeah, the minerality I like.
The minerality. Yeah. So it's a characteristic that is not only from the soil, but we have to think that Garganica we usually harvest in the middle of October.
Yeah.
So it's a very late harvest when the color of the skin is orange, and we have this particular aroma, especially yellow fruits, but it maintains a good acidity, also the minerality taste.
And it's always usually fairly priced too, which is kind of nice given given the cost of white Burgundy and all these other wines these days.
Yes, we can compare Soave with other appellations, we have a denomination around the world, but yes, good quality with the correct price.
Yeah. Now you brought a wine which is also a wine that's really having its moment. I think Lugana is a wine that everybody's talking about, drinking, very fashionable now. What can you tell us about Lugana? What's the story?
So Lugana is the smallest appellation that we have in the Verona province. It's an appellation that we share with another province, Brescia, in Lombardy region. So we are in the southern part of the Garda Lake, beside the lake. There are beautiful vineyards. The characteristics of Lugana is the soil completely different than Soave. Here in Lugana is a poor white soil, it's a limestone, poor limestone with a lot of clay. It's a type of soil very difficult, especially in the summer period, because it's similar to concrete. It's very hard to work, but it's possible to obtain this fantastic white, where the acidity is something special, and the reason is a mix of the indigenous varieties Trebbiano di Lugana, called also Turbiana, and this particular type of soil, a lot of clay, and we have this taste, very interesting, especially if we talk about in general cuisine, if you think of something of the seafood, is something that is very easy pairing with the Lugana.
Yeah, it's quite a delicious wine. It has a lot of character too. It's very flavorful as well. Like it's not a light wine. It has good intensity of flavor as well.
Yeah.
And I guess if you're holidaying in Lake Garda, you're drinking Lugana.
You drink Lugana not only around the Lake Garda, but also in the Verona city, in Milan, in Brescia, in Venice.
Oh, wow.
Is the most popular, not popular in terms of quantity, but is today the classic aperitif.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty chic.
Very chic. Very chic.
Very Italian, too. I love it. I love that styling. My guest, by the way, is Christian Ridolfi. He's a winemaker for Santi Wines. Also in the Gruppo Italiano Vini is Bola. Bola, we know the name. It's as you said, it's been around a long time, but it's been in the export market forever.
Yeah.
So I thought today we would talk. I wanted to talk about one Bola wine because I thought we could get some information from you on the Bola. Is it Poiane?
The Poiane is a label where in the Poiane we find the Ripasso.
Yeah.
It's a Ripasso. So Poiane is a particular white bird that we have in the Valpolicella. It's similar to the eagle. It's a very big, big bird that goes up and down along the valley, especially where there is a Bola winery. So we have to think Valpolicella is a hilly area between the Alps mountains and the flatland area. We have these beautiful valleys with the same direction from north to south. But we have a particular ventilation, especially during the night. So we have a very cool temperature from the mountains to through the valley. And this is a perfect place where it's possible to cultivate Corvina, Corvinone, Rondinella. Our indigenous varieties, but they're they need a warm temperature during the winter and a cool temperature during the spring and summer. So the place, the territory is very, very important.
Yeah.
Only by Policella, these varieties find the perfect place where to produce a beautiful grape.
Yeah.
And we obtain the Valpolicella, Amarone, and Ripasso.
Yeah. This is a Classico Superiore, but Ripasso is a term that's maybe misunderstood a bit or not understood well enough. So you're the winemaker. Tell us about Ripasso. Why do you do it? What is it? How does it affect the wine?
So Ripasso means to repeat.
Yeah.
In Italian, Ripasso means repeat. What? The fermentation. So we do, when we harvest grapes in the middle of September, we do the first fermentation, the primary fermentation, and then there is another one in between January, February on the Amarone pomace. So we have to think, for to produce Amarone, we selected the best bunches, we put them in a crates, and then in a drying shed for 4 months, a very long period.
Yeah.
We usually crush grapes at the end of December.
And these are grapes that lost, what, like 30-35% or something of their weight?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so they're intense.
Very intense.
Yeah.
During their drying process, barrel reduces water, but it's especially a new life that we give grape. So we have to think during the drying process, especially Corvina and Corvinone continue to produce new aroma, new taste in the skin.
Oh, okay.
This is the reason because Amarone is so particular, it's so good. It's not only because it's concentrated wine, but it's a new type of aroma that only through the appassimento is possible to have.
Yeah.
Before finishes the Amarone fermentation in January, we rack the Amarone to another tank, and we introduce the Valpolicella inside the Amarone fermentation onto
those skins.
Yes, and finds Amarone skins, juice, sugar, yeast, and there is this second fermentation.
Yeah,
that is not very important in term of alcohol, but it lasts around 10 days, so enough to produce something very interesting. So we usually call Ripasso baby Marone, but Ripasso is something more. It's a very interesting red.
So you, in the second fermentation, what, you gain maybe 1 degree of alcohol?
Yes.
It's not important. It's
from
just
12.5 to 13.5, 14 maximum, but is
but the difference. So the difference between a straight Valpolicella and that wine, is it a texture thing then when you taste the wine, or how would you describe it when someone buys it?
From Valpolicella to Ripasso, in Ripasso we find more color, more intensity for the aroma, more fruitiness, more spiciness, so more roundness, thicker tannins, but with a velvet perception, with a good roundness. So,
Can we drink it right away, or should we age that a bit, that wine, when we buy a Ripasso, or can you drink it right away?
Okay, Ripasso is ready after the correct aging barrel, so 1 year and a half is not necessarily a long, long time.
No.
So Ripasso is ready 2 years after the main fermentation, the harvest, but it's a type of wine that can stay in the bottle for a very long period.
Yeah.
Improving the aroma, the quality is drinkable when it's ready put in the bottle, but it can last many years maintaining the same characteristics. So it's a particular alchemy. So it's difficult to explain something where it's so bound to the territory. The method of appassimento is something unique, special.
Yeah, very authentic, huh?
Very authentic,
Great to catch up with you, Christian. I hope you're going to enjoy Vancouver for a few days. And
thank you.
And I'm sure that people, if they have a chance to buy or taste your wine, should check it out. This Lugana, we've been tasting the Santi Lugana. Is it 2022. Lovely fresh wine. But I think this wine would age a bit too. There's no rush to drink it.
I think a lot of acidity.
Yeah.
There is also the correct quantity of tannins to feel a good white wine, but enough to avoid the oxidation during the time. So it's something particular, Lugana, because it has a thick skin with maybe one of the richest grapes that we have in Italy for tannins, but they are very, very soft.
Yeah, so delicious. Thanks so much.
Thank you so
great
much
to
for
catch
your time.
Up. Yeah, Christian Ridolfi is the winemaker at Santi, part of the Gruppo Italiano Vina. Up next is Rod Hallam. He's the export manager for Villa Maria Wines from New Zealand.
There's more still to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Escape to Tinhorn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
One of the best things about drinking wine today is that inexpensive wine has never been better. Helping you to improve your wine knowledge and find great buys in the marketplace has been a lifelong goal of mine, because once you become a savvy shopper, you can influence retailers to start selling better wines at better prices. So learning just a little bit more about wine can improve the local selection in your neighborhood. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit us at gismondionwine.com to become a savvy shopper and drink better wine.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio, live from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to the show. Our guest is Rod Hallam. He's the export manager for Canada for Villa Maria Wines, an old name in wine production from New Zealand. Rod, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. You're surrounded by Italians. Are you feeling okay? Or?
Well, it's interesting. In a few weeks, we're going to be a Pro Vine, and the Italians are always coming to the Villa Maria booth. They love New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
It's funny. They've got a couple of producers here from Frescobaldi and some others, and just today, like talking with them, they don't get a lot of New Zealand wines in their markets, right?
No, so they don't get any. I was looking at the sales of imports are like a half of 1% or something in Italy. So, but they do love freshness, and you have it in spades. So that, I thought we'd start today to talk about that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole phenomenon of Sauvignon Blanc. It's had a long run, like from the beginning. I know I was out there many times in the 90s when they were really pushing and moving. And what is the state of Sauvignon Blanc, do you think, today?
It's still very much the category. It's still growing considerably. And it's, when you think about it, you know, the first plantings in Marlborough, like 1972, 74. Yeah. Right? So in the last 40 years, you've grown from, you know, non-existent in the wine world to now New Zealand is the number two producer for Sauvignon Blanc. Like, we are, we're just globally recognized as a style of wine that you can't produce anywhere else.
It's,
we're fortunate by the sort of perfect environment with terroir, mountains, like it's just
water.
It
drives,
yeah.
Cold water.
Cold water.
Yeah.
Sunshine. Like, again, it's sort of tying back to Italy. Like, New Zealand is roughly about the same size as Italy in terms of the landmass. But, you know, geographically in the Southern Hemisphere, we're the same. Like, the Marlborough Valleys would sit where Rome and Barcelona is. So these should be much warmer places. So we're getting that sun ripening coming through the wine.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think we've been growing fantastically through the last 40 years. And even through this sort of downturn as we're turning back to normal, New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is still in growth.
Yeah. They just don't get those winds from Antarctica, I think, in Rome.
No. the Mediterranean's a touch warmer, right?
Yeah, a touch warmer. Okay, so which leads us to the first wine I want to talk about today with you that you brought. So this, we could call this maybe a new look at Sauvignon Blanc or a different look at it. How would you describe that? Or
so we've been producing these reserve wines for about the last 15 years, right?
Yeah.
So and it's been, so with our previous, like what George Fisnich, who founded the company back in 1961, was a real enthusiast for wines, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, for him, when winemakers would bring him new wines, they'd be putting them into bottle. As we look to this, I think what Villa Maria is doing here with our Reserve Wairau is we're sort of deconstructing those valleys, right? So you'll know that with your experience, you've tasted many wines from both valleys. You're aware of the Awatere driving a much cooler style, and then this warmer style coming from the Wairau. These clay soils, these free-draining silts, they tend to produce a more fleshier style. It tends
Definitely.
To be 4 to 5 degrees warmer in the valleys here, so it's much much more riper, tropical fruit. The acidity is a little softer. It's interesting, this style tends to resonate really with the North American consumer. They like that warm, fruity, that crowd-pleasing style.
Yeah.
The aromatics tend to be more on your sort of rosemary thyme as opposed to your classic tomato leaf coming through from the Awatere. I love this style. It's
pretty pungent. It really is, packs a load of flavor and aroma.
Yeah. Well, that's the classic New Zealand. We produce a lot of aromatics, a lot of flavor. But what I like here is that, and unfortunately we don't get the opportunity to taste them side by side, which are, you know, in the Awatere, you're getting a very different style. So with Villa Maria, it's not about taking New Zealand to 11. We're already at an incredibly expressive style of wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's about letting the enthusiasts understand exactly what it is they like, right? So if they're more pursuant of the acidity or the green notes, then they're coming into the Awatere.
Yep.
But here with the Wairau, it's that riper, fleshier style, which, again, really beautiful as a pairing for foods.
This wine, by the way, is $29.99, sold here in B.C., is it in the stores, in the private wine shops, or
it is in the stores?
Yeah, in the government stores. Yeah, good. Villa Maria. Well, George, I met George many, many, many years ago when he first was, like 35 years ago, probably. He was a force, still is a force, I guess. But
yeah, he's slowing down a bit. He's moved on from the winery now. He's 80. I think he's 84 now, right? So
okay, geez, I should be moving on.
But, you know, he's been such an iconic force for the New Zealand wine business.
He was such a champion.
Well, he was back in the 80s. He started to set the tone. New Zealand had this opportunity to grow a lot of grapes, but George was one of the pioneers for really instructing the wine growers to understand exactly what the winemakers were looking for, and really setting limits on tonnage and croppage. So the desire to just produce too much wine.
Yeah.
But that's why he received a knighthood for his contributions to the wine industry. He's a real icon, and, you know, again, working for Villa Maria, it's been such a personal experience. You know, my first trip to New Zealand was, you know, George and his wife Gail took me out for dinner, which is unusual for, you know, you have someone who's welcoming you into their home.
Yeah.
They're telling you their life stories. It's not your typical president and owner of a company.
He's just a
dynamic personality.
He's a warm guy. My guest is Rod Halm. He's export manager in Canada for Villa Maria Wines. We've been talking about the Wairau Sauvignon Blanc 2023. But we're going to move to Pinot Noir, and I remember I attended the first Pinot Noir conference. Well, I attended a few of them, but I was at the first one in New Zealand, and that was kind of a startling moment for me, because there was kind of an announcement, or as only the New Zealanders could do, they had assessed the entire Pinot Noir market globally, done a whole lot of, you know, just every country, whoever was producing it, what was going on, and they announced in front of this huge crowd of Pinot files from around the world that they had come to the conclusion that that about 75% of all the Pinot Noir made in the world was just crap. It's only they could say. And they said, so that's what we're going to surpass, and we're going to do that in about 3 years. And they pretty much did.
Yeah.
They did that sort of juicy Marlborough style, and they were right. Like, the some of those cheap wines coming out of France were awful. Of course, they had the great Crus and everything else from Burgundy, but there was a lot of bad Pinot around. So where are we today? Now we have a we have Taylor's Pass. We have a single vineyard wine from New Zealand. There's a lot happening with Pinot.
Yeah. So and we again with the like as we do with our Sauvignon Blancs, with our Pinot Noir, we have quite a program to develop these single vineyard sites, right? Mm-hmm. So we have our private bin, which is available in stores, which is a great introduction to entry level Pinot.
Yeah.
But as we move into these reserves, and then of course our single vineyard wines are like an ultimate expression. So this coming from Taylor's Pass, this is a beautiful. It's a beautiful vineyard site right on the north bank of the Awatere River. Mm-hmm. It's quite, it's when you're standing there, you're surrounded by sort of woods, but these beautiful, like, heavy, gray, wacky stones that come through the vineyard. It gives this almost like seams, that, and then you have this undulation as well through the vineyard site. And that brings a lot of complexity into the wine. We've changed our style, I think. So when I first started with Villa Maria about 10 years ago, it was much more of an austere sort of dry, like very dry, herbal, cherry fruit flavored wine. So cherry fruit flavor coming through with the wine.
Yeah.
But here we're getting that, using some of the whole bunch press to really bring out some of that plushy, velvety characteristic here.
Right.
I love how indulgent this wine is becoming, right? So wild ferments, it's a very interesting and unique site expression from Taylor's Pass. We tend to get a really clean expression of the fruit. I love the acidity. I love that that sort of wrapping yourself in that cloak of velvet. It's for me, it's one of my favorite Pinots.
Yeah, it's got great texture. This wine is $64.49 from Villa Maria. It's a single vineyard Taylor's Pass Pinot Noir 2019. Is vintage important in New Zealand?
Yeah, 100%, right?
Yeah.
And especially sort of the changes that we're seeing. Obviously, one of the things that gives us great wines is that consistency of temperature and climate, right?
Yeah.
But as you saw, I don't know if you're fully aware, but in 2021, we had a frost inset that deeply impacted the New Zealand wine industry. Almost 7 million cases of wine just failed to be produced because of the lack of fruit. We're seeing this year severe drought within the Marlborough Valleys as well. And so we're getting more vintage variation, and you will see that coming through with our single vineyard wines. Obviously with Private Bin or Cellar Selection or Earth Garden, we're able to pull from a much larger selection of plots, so we can keep that consistency. But we do get significant variation, right? I really like the 2019. I thought it was a fantastic vintage. Again, with this slight slight change to the winemaking style, it is quite an indulgent style. But yeah, we have had quite a few. I think 2015 and 16 were much cooler within the Marlborough Valleys. And so from the winemaker's perspective, some of our single vineyards we didn't produce that year. We just decided that this is not at the benchmark or the quality that we feel to express. Which is sometimes tough to get through to your retailers because they expect to be able to still get those wines, but
and your accountants.
Yeah, well, those are the most difficult to push past. But at the end of the day, we're about selling great wines. We want to bring the best of New Zealand to the rest of the world, and I think that with our single vineyard program and just our wine program in general, it's all about quality great wines from the region.
Hardworking people, the New Zealanders, they never give up. So it's great. Fun to taste these wines. It's been a while, actually. I'm not surprised. I know what's been going on there. But it's, you know, when I started, it was always about the growing season, super long growing season. They could hang the fruit as long as they wanted, and they picked it exactly when they wanted. But the wines seem to have gone far beyond that now, as you say. There's just more depth, more complexity, and more goodness in them, I guess.
Well, if you think about it, like, we don't have the benefits of the old world. There's no 800 years of tradition and notes to make. So even throughout those regions, 40 years of plantings, right? So, so 1930 years. So 50 years of planting, 40 years of export. Even some of the ideas that they thought in the early days that, you know, it's the younger vines that are really bringing this vibrancy and flavor. But it wasn't actually. It's as the region was expanding, you're starting to come into new terroirs and soil types. And it was that yeah, there's actually sub-regions. And this is where those single vineyard ideas come from for us, is that it's not about newer vines. It's that, yeah, there's great regions and there's marginal regions within the Marlborough Valleys. So, yeah, we have not benefited from a huge history of time to be able to make these wines. But as more time has come along, the expansion of technique, the experience, and of course, technology, it's all coming together. So I think we're still seeing, as you would say, the tremendous value still in New Zealand, right? So some of these are have been recognized as some of the top New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs or Pinot Noirs, and still very, very economical, right? Like for $30 for a top New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Compared to Sancerre, you're $45 just to get into the category, right?
That's right.
So, and the same with Pinot Noir. To get really top quality Pinot Noir for under...
Well, we won't even go there. We know that. Rod, thanks so much, Rod. Great to catch up with you.
Oh, thank you, Anthony.
Real pleasure. Rod Hallam, he's the export manager for Canada for Villa Maria Wines from New Zealand. Hey, that's it for today's show. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio special. Thanks to our technical producers, Mike Whittingham on site, Dwayne Bishop back in the home studio, Simon editor Sherry Caleb, and director of operations Stu Ferguson. I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you all a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show from the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. Brought to you in part by the Westin Bayshore Vancouver, our official Vancouver hotel partner. An elegant base to explore Vancouver. Book your stay today at the Westin Bayshore Vancouver.